Please listen carefully.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Summers McKay.
We are part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded, positive news stories every day in order to change the tenor of news media and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
Every weekday, we publish 10 stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now, we will be sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, and home office-worthy podcast.
By subscribing, listening to, and reading and sharing The Optimist Daily, you are on the front lines of action-oriented steps towards solving our world's biggest problems. First you, and then 100,000, and then 100 million people focused on solutions will change the world for good.
Today is Tuesday, March 24th, 2020.
And here are today's top solutions. We're starting off with a story from our health category, why cutting fares can make public transport safer right now. The coronavirus spread has placed American transit agencies in a bind. Ridership has nosedived as much as 70% on the Bay Area's BART system, bringing the corresponding drop in revenue collected from fares. With millions of Americans working from home and sheltering in place, health experts and city leaders are trying to discourage unnecessary travel. But many essential workers still rely on public transit. Even as agency leaders rearrange their budgets, they are struggling to keep their riders and employees safe while still providing service for passengers with no other way to get around. They are in an unenviable position, to put it mildly. Several transit agencies have chosen a novel and counterintuitive strategy to weather this current crisis. Let the passengers ride for free. On March 16, for example, agencies in Akron, Canton, Toledo, and Youngstown all announced that they are terminating fare collection until the virus recedes. These agencies' leaders envision fare-free transit achieving two urgent goals simultaneously. First and foremost, the move can help protect passengers and employees. Since the coronavirus can spread easily among groups in close contact, which the CDC defines as individuals within 6 feet of one another, transit officials have been especially concerned about risk during bus boarding when passengers cluster outside the door before standing inches away from the driver to pay their fares. There are also signs that the virus can live on paper and metal, which may include currency and fare cards. Free transit can also offer another benefit, a financial cushion to riders struggling during the pandemic. With many people scrambling to make ends meet, dropping fares is one way to help people out in this time of need. To be clear, these agencies have promised to pause fare collection during the pandemic, not end it permanently, like their peers in Kansas City and Olympia, Washington are hoping to do. And Summers, I just wanted to mention that the buses here in Santa Barbara are also not taking fares right now. They're having anyone who's older or immunocompromised board at the front of the bus. Everyone else is supposed to board at the back. I just noticed that. I don't take the bus, but I did notice that as I was walking by one the other day with the dog.
It's really interesting to think from the perspective of the folks who have to take public transportation, our healthcare workers and those in essential jobs. You know, for those of us who are sheltering in place and are at home, that's not necessarily a concern, but this is a great solution. So thank you for sharing, Christy. Another bright spot to look at right now in our environment section is that climate activism continues to thrive despite the pandemic. Building on the success of last September's worldwide climate strikes, which saw 8 million people take to the streets to demand action, climate activists hope to make a big splash this April for the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. But then came the coronavirus, which has put a dent into those plans, along with emissions. The good thing about climate activists, if you haven't noticed, is that they're incredibly resilient, finding ways to continue spreading awareness and invoking action while staying at home. For instance, many climate activists see this moment as a way to educate more people about the climate crisis through targeted online campaigns, distributing educational material, and encouraging virtual training and webinars. They also point out that this public health crisis should be a further push for people to act quickly and urgently on the climate crisis, because large-scale social and economic disruptions are likely to be increasingly frequent as the consequences of the climate crisis become more severe. Climate action events aren't stopping either, with digital events popping up left and right. Earth Day Network, along with Climate Initiative Exponential Roadmap, and the social network We Don't Have Time, is hosting the third annual We Don't Have Time online climate conference during Earth Day week, April 20th through 25th, with more than 20 hours of live talks and events. That'll keep us busy. Meanwhile, the global organizer of Earth Day has called for the first digital Earth Day, which includes virtual protests, social media campaigns, online teach-ins, and more. A full scope of Earth Day's digital actions will be available at earthday.org. Beyond moving strikes online, many organizations are seeing the forced downtime as an opportunity to get more people involved and to regroup. Increased physical isolation means that they have the opportunity to strengthen and educate many new and existing members who were inspired by the protests last year. For 350.org, an organization against fossil fuels that really took off last year, quarantine has been a moment to take a breather and strengthen the climate front online. The fact that we're all going to be sitting at home online actually means we could build more of a global community.
That's true. And it's sort of interesting to see how this has focused all of our attention on a single process, a single problem that really needs to take all of us to address, which is very similar to the climate crisis, which felt like a longer, scarier prospect in some ways. But now we've, you know, having us all come together the way we are, it's just we can learn lessons from what we're doing right now to really address the climate change crisis on a broader scale.
Yeah, there's a tremendous power in collective action. And It is just such a unique opportunity for us to see that power in collective action on all sides of the fence. The coronavirus has really been a unifying effort for a lot of people to protect our world and protect our people. And now we just can dive even deeper and to continue to protect our climate.
Absolutely. Well, our next story is also from the environment category, and it's about how to make a spring garden that is resilient to climate change. And it's a great thing to do while we're all stuck at home. Well, with springtime in the air and the days getting longer, you may well be dreaming or daydreaming about your garden or flower bed in the quiet weekend hours that you hope to spend there for weeks to come. But knowing what to plant as temperatures climb and precipitation patterns change around the world can be the challenge, especially after the planet experienced the hottest decade on record, according to the NOAA. To make sure your plants thrive this spring, here are some useful tips from EcoWatch. Drought-tolerant plants. If the region you live in is already a fairly dry one, like, for example, the American West, the Middle East, and North Africa, and much of Australia, you are likely to experience even drier conditions and the occasional drought as the world continues to warm. So, which plants are less thirsty and more resilient during periods of drought? Lavender is a particularly popular and wonderfully fragrant plant. It's a common plant that has evolved to subsist on little water. Cushion spurge, Euphorbia, with its pale green leaves and yellow bracts, is an especially good drought-tolerant plant for gardens in cooler climes. And ornamental grasses tend to be both aesthetically pleasing and drought-tolerant more generally. Heat-tolerant plants. A few of the plants mentioned above as being drought-tolerant can also deal pretty well in higher temperatures, including butterfly weed and purple coneflower. Celosia, with its bright, feathery orange, purple, yellow, red, and white plumes, is a favorite for many American gardeners and is well known to remain upright and strong, even in the sizzling heat. When it comes to perennials and other shrubs, consider adding viburnum to your landscape. Its fragrant clusters of delicate white blossoms arrive fairly early in the season, often in late May and June, and it does a famously good job of standing up to late summer heat. Then there's rain gardens. When it comes to our changing climate, it's fairly safe to expect the wet to get wetter and the dry to get drier. If you are in a region experiencing more and more precipitation and are looking for a great way to soak up some of that extra rain while keeping your landscape looking beautiful, consider a rain garden. According to groundwater.org, a rain garden is a garden of native shrubs, perennials, and flowers planted in a small depression, which is generally formed on a natural slope. It is designed to temporarily hold and soak in rainwater runoff that flows from rooftops, driveways, patios, or lawns. Some shrubs that are tolerant to flood-like conditions include elderberry, silky dogwood, winterberry, and swamp azalea. American beautyberry, red oyster dogwood, and Virginia sweet spire can handle pretty wet conditions also, but they don't love it when standing water hangs around quite that long. So these are some great ideas on how to spend some time at home making our landscapes beautiful, depending on where we live in the world.
I think the key extract on that is try to plant local or native plants. And oftentimes we have been conditioned to try to go for the roses or go for the big bright flowers. And a year ago, began a native garden at my home on the Central Coast. A year later, it is so beautiful. It it's just made it through this whole season, and I am just delighted by it. We call it the secret garden, and I sit and look out my window at it, and native plants really surprised us. They're gorgeous. All right. Another environmental story. Christy, I think we have a theme today. I think you and I were in an environmental mood.
That's right.
Successful conservation efforts offer a glimmer of hope for the African black rhino. Wildlife in Africa is celebrating an important win as the numbers of African black rhinos in the wild have risen by several hundred, which is a rare boost for a species driven to near extinction by poaching. While challenges remain to protect these majestic creatures, the small increase, an annual rate of 2.5% over 6 years, has increased the population from 4,845 in 2012 to an estimated 5,630 in 2018, giving hope that efforts put into saving the species are paying off. The painstaking efforts to save the black rhino have included moving some individuals from established groups to new locations, increasing the species range and ensuring viable breeding populations, as well as protecting them through stronger law enforcement efforts. Numbers of all of the three subspecies of black rhinos are currently improving as poaching has declined over the last couple years, owing to governments taking stronger measures against criminal gangs behind poaching. The black rhino is still under the threat of extinction, but the increase in the animal's population represents a reminder to the global community that conservation efforts work when done right.
This is a great story, Summers, and it doesn't include it in this article, but I do think that they've been doing some interesting financing around conservation of the black rhino, where they're creating funds that will pay back if they're successful. And so if they are successful towards these governments, there's some funding mechanisms that are going into the conservation efforts around the rhino. And I don't have that information on the tip of my keyboard right now, but I'd be really interested to see how that is interacting with these other conservation efforts and how they've been successful.
Yeah, let's do a follow-up story on this one, Christy, because there's also an adorable baby rhino in Denver, Colorado that is searching for its name. And there is an online campaign to help name the baby rhino, and he's adorable, and you should, or is it a girl? I think it's a girl. Regardless, the darling baby rhino needs a name, and part of the denverzoo.org voting will also benefit rhino conservation.
Wonderful. Okay, well, in our final story today, it's from our building community category. Communities are filling little free libraries with critical supplies during COVID-19. Little free libraries gained popularity around 2010 as local sources for book sharing. Now these mini libraries that are tucked into many neighborhoods are getting new life as sources for supplies during COVID-19. The official Little Free Library program started in 2009, and now, in addition to old murder mystery novels or how-to knitting books, many San Francisco residents are filling the small stations with food, soap, and much sought-after rolls of toilet paper. The trend began about a week ago, and now the little libraries all over the Bay Area and even in Washington and Wisconsin are participating. Some have Girl Scout cookies or canned food. One even had a small bottle of bourbon tucked into it. There's concern about sanitizing shared items, of course. One library in Wisconsin had specific instruction for sanitizing items before placing them into the library. Another suggested sanitizing books and wrapping them in paper before placing them in the donation sites. During this stressful and confusing time, providing for our community can give us a sense of purpose and support those around us who may not have easy or safe access to grocery stores and critical supplies. These little libraries are a perfect solution for giving out goods while social distancing to neighbors in need. Next time you take a walk around your own neighborhood, keep an eye out for these little free libraries and consider contributing. Even better, if you have one of your own, add some supplies to it and start a trend in your own community.
Thank you for listening to the Optimist Daily Update. We promise to continue to share positive, solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. We promise to continue to cover the current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com. And for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be a part of the solution changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset.
Thanks, everybody. Have a fantastic day.
Thanks, Summers.